you want to make a difference, you need to start a podcast. You need to be listening to podcasts and starting a podcast. There's an outdated saying or where it's the man in the arena. The man in the arena, that was fine 100 years ago. And now it's the man in the studio. The man in the studio is the one reshaping the world, or he's going to die trying, essentially.
I just think there's consequences of the retardation. Like, that's the only thing that's changed, is that it's been super retarded for a long time, but people really haven't had an issue with it being retarded because it's been relatively comfortable. But that, nothing that we're seeing today is new. The TV lying to you, people on the internet lying to you, people lying in general, people having strange opinions about things that don't matter. None of it's new. None of it's, you know, there hasn't been much innovation and retardation, in my opinion. It's been stagnant.
This is just another example of how fiat rings everything. What the fuck happened in 1971? Well, innovation and retardation is one of the things that stopped going up in 1971. So we need a retardation on a hard money standard, on a Bitcoin standard.
That's what statism is at the end of the day, is it's trying to wield this vehicle of violence to control other people's behavior. And the statists are, you know, becoming increasingly more interested in Bitcoin. And there's a lot of statists with strange opinions on how people should have sex. The next Bitcoin civil war, so to say, on Twitter, that, you know, the PSYOP pseudo-spoofed engagement farming nonsense might be over how podcasters need to have sex, or should have sex.
You can't go on Bitcoin Twitter anymore without seeing somebody exploiting controversy, conflict, and retardation to try to sell something that maybe probably somebody doesn't need. It's sell your overpriced trinkets to boomers. Don't do it. Don't sell your overpriced trinkets to...
I think we can make a sizable difference. I mean, this is like the exciting thing that Bitcoin teaches people, is that you can be an active... You can be an active player in your life. You can be an active participant in the world, that you can go out there and just do things, that you don't have to sit around for permission from some guy that went to Epstein Island. Like, you can choose what you want to do, pursue it, and actually fight for it. And you have the tools to be able to actually engage in the fight and be successful in it. I really enjoy it. Like, I want nothing more than people to send me hate mail.
To boil it all down, it's... I just want to tell the truth in a way that help that people can identify with maybe a little bit better. And sometimes that's all it takes to kind of break the cognitive dissonance or start the process. And I think that's what good journalists should try to do.
There's a lot of people out there that like to turn their nose ups to Bitcoin podcasters, and they like to dismiss it. Realistically, you could have a massive impact on somebody's life and the choices that they make, because you're talking about a subject that actually matters. And very few people in the media ecosystem are talking about subjects that matter right now.
Opinions are like plebs. They're all retarded.
Listen to 40 hours of Bitcoin podcasts a week, smoke cigarettes, and read Atlas Shrugged twice a year. And I think if you do those three things, you're going to be incredibly successful in the fourth turning. You'll be able to survive it. You're not going to be pleb cannon fodder. You're going to be incredibly successful.
Is that still active? I know the account hasn't been... The vibes haven't just been quite as high the past month or two. I'm wondering what happened.
The vibes have been a little weird, but I've got to say, in the Vibes Capital Management group chat, the vibes have been pretty solid. So it is very much still happening. It's yeah, but the vibes have been weird more broadly, I would say, right? Like, it's just been like people have just got their, I think people just love getting their panties in a twist, honestly. Like, it makes them feel alive to have a little bit of constricted blood flow due to their twisted panties. And like, That's kind of how they like derive meaning, right? Is how many twists can one get in their panties?
Everybody's got their knobs twisted. They're getting their knickers tied up in knots. And I don't know. What do you think? When did the vibe shift this summer? Because we had a great beginning of the summer. We had paper Bitcoin summer, and then everything just kind of flatlined. We had a plateau with the Vibes Capital Management. way less active on the timeline, but it sounds like they were active in the group chats. And that's what it seems like to me, is that right now, all the good alpha, all the good content is actually in the group chats. It's not on the timeline. And the timeline is just full of nothing burgers and failed announcements.
And announcements of announcements that have also failed. You know, I think the vibe shifted when everybody started calling everybody else pedos. Like, that was probably, like, for me, that was when it was like, huh, okay, like, we're at that stage where it's like, I disagree with you, so you are a pedo, however they spell it in the UK. Because I think they, what else do they call them over there? Is it a nonce? Is that the word for it? Which is, like, funny from, like, a Bitcoin perspective, because, you know, we have, like, nonces in the technical sense, and in the UK, they've got them in the pervert sense. So, like, that's kind of neat.
I refuse to speak British.
I won't do it either. I speak American, thank you very much.
Exactly.
I mean, my last name, I literally legally changed it to America. It used to be Walker England, but I was told that saying the word England was actually hate speech in the United Kingdom. So I had to change it for legal reasons. And then I was like, well, I'll just make it America. I'm not going to let you colonize my name, you sons of bitches.
I wonder, you know, we talked about this a little bit before we went live, but you have a very seductive podcast voice. Like, I think between your modeling career and your voice, we haven't had a good Marlboro cowboy in decades. And it seems like, it sounds like you smoke Marlboros. You have that gritty, seductive Marlboro voice. Have you reached out to them? Has there been any conversation about being the next Marlboro cowboy? The Marlboro man.
I would start smoking Marbs again. I know I was a Marb Light kind of guy, right? Just because you can run through a pack of them without breaking a sweat, right? But I would probably start smoking Marbs again, just, you know, if they sponsored me. Because, like, you as a Bitcoin podcaster, you have to go above and beyond for your sponsor. So if they were like, we need you, you know, down in a pack per podcast, I'd be like, yeah, I'll do that. I would ideally, you know who my ideal sponsor is? Well, it'd probably be the cool, refreshing taste of a fine Pilsner beer, Miller Lite. You know, I mean, that's just an American beer. You know,
I heard you talented. Well, that you were looking. Did you get that? Is that your free palette of Miller Lite? Did it come through? Or are you still hoping for that to come through?
I wish. I'm still hoping for it to come through. But I did get a box of Peony Lane wine from Ben Justman. Or, as I like to say, Peon My Lane wine. Peon My Lane wine. What's the difference between a chickpea and a garbanzo bean? I've never had a garbanzo bean on my face.
I've never made a chickpea.
There you go. If Ben Justman is listening right now, you are welcome for the very appropriate advertising. Feel free to use that in all of your next infomercials. Do they still do infomercials, actually? I haven't watched, like, quote, cable TV in so long. Is that still a thing?
I think we need to bring it back. I think,
like, for Bitcoin, maybe?
Yeah. The hardware wallet infomercials, the paper Bitcoin infomercials. If there's one thing that boomers, this is how we get the wealth out of the hands of the boomers. If there's one thing that boomers want, it's infomercials. Like, they're bored. They're sitting in their retirement homes. Their grandkids aren't calling them. You can only watch so much network news and sports ball. They're going to get tired of it, and they're going to want to figure out what to do with their time. Besides that, and infomercials are a great, great release for them. And if we hit them with Bitcoin infomercials, it'll be awesome.
We've got to, like, package it in a way that makes, like, I remember all those infomercials, like, I think even South Park did an episode on this, like, with all the, you know, like, repurposed Indian gold and stuff. And this, like, it's a great episode. But, like, we got to find some way to really boomerize Bitcoin a little bit. You know, like, I think it has to be physical. Like, you've almost got to give them, like a coin and say, like one of those cassatious coins, you know, but with, like, a couple sats on it now. And, like, because I think they need to touch it, right? Because that's, like, the classic boomer thing is, like, well, I can't touch it, and I only like things I can touch. And so I don't think I want any of them bitty coins. And, you know, I don't, but at the same time, like, okay, I struggle with this because, on the one hand, I'm like, I would like to help boomers. On the other hand, I'm like, oh, you've been helped pretty well by the last, like, 50 years of monetary policy. And, like, you know, you bought your house for 2 raspberries and, you know, I have to sell my second born child because I wouldn't sell my first, obviously, but I have to sell my second born to, you know, buy a home. Don't have him yet, but he's already promised just to the bank, you know, and, you know, the wife made a fuss about it, but it's like, honey, you want a home or do you want to have that child? You know, and the bank will raise him well. They will. Teach him to be a banker. But yeah, I digress. I don't even remember what I was talking about before.
Well,
I started.
I think that's a great idea. And I think the info, like, think about QVC, like how many boomers spend, you got two types of boomers. You got the boomers who want to spend all their social security at the slot machines in Vegas. We saw those at the Bitcoin conference, right? And you got the other type of boomer who they want to sit on in their couch or on their lazy boy at home, and they want to watch QVC and just buy crap that, you know, that they see for sale on QVC. So why don't we, this is my solution. Why don't we set up Strike and have their social security checks sent straight to their Strike wallet, converted to Bitcoin. And then on QVC, you just put up a Lightning invoice, and then you can get, you know, your precious moment trinkets. You can get some new, expensive decorations for your Christmas tree, because boomers love the war on Christmas. They get angry about it, but they love to be consumers to support a cause. And I think if we bring and make it possible for Bitcoin or for boomers to spend their Bitcoin as consumers for a cause, I think that is how we can really, I think, kickstart the medium of exchange, habit. We need to get those consumer spending habits. And I think it starts with the boomers.
I think that's a kind of really brilliant, like, this is how we orange pill the next wave. It's about QVC, but for Bitcoin. I think it's pretty brilliant. And, you know, again, these things are people love the nostalgia of these things, right? It's like, oh, like this is hearkening back to a simpler time, right? If maybe it was a less retarded time, it was probably just as equally retarded. But like in retrospect, maybe everything, I don't know. In retrospect, do things seem more retarded or less, would you say?
I think it's about the same personally. I just think there's consequences of the retardation. Like that's the only thing that's changed is that it's been super retarded for a long time, but people really haven't had an issue with it being retarded because it's been relatively comfortable. But nothing that we're seeing today is new. The TV lying to you, people on the internet lying to you, people lying in general, people having strange opinions about things that don't matter. None of it's new. None of it's, you know, there hasn't been much innovation and retardation, in my opinion. It's been stagnant, and I think it's an improper, you know, framing to. It's just, yeah, things are falling apart, and yeah, there's consequences to it. Like this is why when things are comfortable, it's important to have standards. Because you get to places like this because nonsense is put up with it, or people just put up with it in general.
And this is just another example of how fiat rings everything. You know, what the fuck happened in 1971? Well, innovation and retardation is one of the things that stopped going up in 1971. So we need a retardation on a hard money standard, on a Bitcoin standard, because right now it's just very... Michael Saylor likes to say it's not thermodynamically sound. It means there is like energy leak in the system. So everybody is just trying to monetize conflict and monetize retardation to sell some swag, to sell some merch, to sell a hardware wallet, whatever it is, to sell a node. And that's just what's happening now. Like it's infected the Bitcoin ecosystem. You can't go on Bitcoin Twitter anymore without seeing somebody exploiting controversy, conflict, and retardation to try to sell, you know, something that maybe probably, you know, somebody doesn't need. Is sell your overpriced trinkets to boomers. Don't do it. Don't sell your overpriced trinkets to.
I think that's really the takeaway message here, is that we should be exploiting the boomer class and extracting as much wealth from them as possible, not exploiting our fellow plebs and extracting wealth from them. It's like this needs to be a concerted effort of wealth extraction from the boomers. Otherwise, we're just, you know, what are we doing? We're playing right into the boomers' hands. This is what they want, is to extract value from, you know, for us to extract it from each other, when in reality, like, we don't need a circular value extraction economy amongst ourselves. We need a drain the value from the teats of the boomers, those, you know, engorged teats of their, of those boomers filled with all that fiat. We need to be sucking as much value out of there as possible. And yes, that teat may be toxic, but you know what? We convert it to the hardest money that's ever existed. And then it's okay. It's been neutralized. It's been sterilized. It's been made palatable, really. It's, you know, it's turning that dirty swamp water into potable water. And I think that's what we really have to, or into a fine, ice cold, refreshing, fine Pilsner beer known as a Miller Lite. That's what I'd like to see.
Yeah, I think there's a negative connotation with the word extraction, which I don't think is fair. And I think it's important. Like and there's a negative connotation with the word exploit, but you have to identify who has the money and you have to provide value to them. And I think the key is to do it honestly. Like we don't have to all go out there and, you know, spam all these, you know, ignorant boomers with calls like, hey, you know, I'm your nephew or grandchild in jail, like send us all your Bitcoin or whatever so that we can get out. Like that's dishonest. I think it's important not to
be. I agree.
It's not helpful to be misleading, because that type of behavior just leads to degeneracy and nonsense. But like, you know, you're identifying what the boomers want. They like bingo. They like slot machines. They like infomercials. They like postcards. Postcards is a really great strategy. Bumper stickers. They like
stamps.
Virtue stamps.
Stamps for stamps.
Yeah, yeah. You just create products for boomers, and they'll give you. They like cliche wall hangings.
Mm. Mm. Live, laugh, stack. Maybe would be like a nice one. Like there you go. I don't know, what is that? $1 billion idea right there? $2 billion? We're giving these out for free. Hello, friends. You may notice that there are no sponsors for this episode, and that is because this is a pure value for value episode. So, if you find this episode valuable, consider giving value back. You can do that by becoming a paid subscriber on Fountain. You can send me a zap on Noster, a boost on Fountain. Or if you don't feel like doing any of those, one thing you can do that is totally free is just to share this show with your friends, family, and strangers on the internet so that it reaches more people. If you are listening on a podcasting app like Apple Podcasts, you can also give this a 5-star rating so more people find the show. You can subscribe on YouTube, Rumble, or wherever else you're watching. But again, I always recommend that Bitcoiners check out Fountain. You can also go check out the Big Print audiobook, which I narrated. You also, of course, do not have to do any of those things. Bitcoin does not care, but I sure do appreciate all of your support. So thank you.
Boomers have never heard the phrase, you never sell your Bitcoin. And a lot of people are there, you know, maybe we can get into this later. Maybe this isn't the time, but we're passionate advocates for Bitcoin podcasts. We think that more people need to listen to Bitcoin podcasts. They need to listen to at least 40 hours of week or per week of Bitcoin podcasts. And we need more Bitcoin podcasters. But the right target demo here is the boomer clucks. I mean, we're talking about, you know, we need more infomercials. We need TVC, SAS for stance. You can make a Bitcoin podcast that is essentially just a live stream on YouTube that's, you know, the same as QVC. You could sell, you know, Etsy art. You could sell, you know, Asino Gold, big fan of the Bugle. You know, he makes lots of anonymous masks art, and you could sell that to boomers. Boomers love stuff like that. It's so ripe for exploiting in the, you know, the healthy sense, the thermodynamically sound sense.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's wholesome exploitation, because you can't actually exploit the boomer if you're giving them something of value. Like you said, I think if you're ripping them off, if you're doing, you know, one of those, if you know, you're running an Indian call center and you're using it to rip off boomers, like that's not cool, man. Like that's obviously not cool. But you giving them little tchotchkes and for sats, like, I'm sorry, but that's a win-win. They're going to buy the tchotchkes anyway. Sats may as well flow. The sats must, in fact, flow. So why should they not be flowing for boomer tchotchkes, right? I think that's really the question that we all have to ask ourselves.
Yeah, you can sell, you can even do, you know, funeral homes. People love to sell expensive caskets and funeral. Would you rather spend your sats at you know, $110,000 USDT exchange rate today for a coffin? Would you rather buy a coffin for 250,000 USDT per Bitcoin? It's, you know, in a deflationary world, you know, it's I don't know, maybe that's backwards, but I think that they'll understand the logic.
The key is basically buy your coffin sooner in fiat or later in Bitcoin, maybe. I think we're getting there, right? Yeah. Something like
that. Yeah, that sounds right.
Funeral homes with services priced in sats. Maybe there we go. We're just, honestly, I don't even know. We should maybe get off air because we're giving out too many good business ideas here. But you know what? That's just like, I feel like people need to recognize that as a Bitcoin podcaster, which we all are, this is what you do, right? You just give out great ideas for free. You give out all this alpha. You try to encourage more people to be Bitcoin podcasters, to give out more alpha. And that's just a virtuous cycle of Bitcoin podcasters podcasting about Bitcoin podcasting. And I think that more people need to get into that virtuous cycle because that is the true, you know, accretive circular economy that we need to build. It's just everyone's a Bitcoin podcaster, basically. And once we kind of reach that, I feel like the world just gets a whole lot better. Like imagine a world on a Bitcoin podcaster standard. What does it look like? Well, I bet it looks pretty damn sweet. Pretty damn sweet.
I think we need to give these guys as many business ideas as possible so they quit smoking weed and get off the couch and stop arguing with each other about nonsense. There's a lot more productive things to do than being grumpy and being stuck.
I say amen to that. And there is a lot of just general grumpiness. I don't even, do we even want to say the word that starts with a silent K on this show? Or do we just want to avoid it entirely? Do we want to talk about it by not talking about it? I guess is what I'm asking. Or do we want to just not talk about it by not talking about it?
It's hard to avoid because hard forks are quote unquote all the rage right now. And there's a lot. There's all kinds. There's drama over. There's all this meta drama that surrounds the main drama, right? Like you've got whose girlfriend is reporting this news? Who are our journalists allowed to have sex? Our poor dad is allowed to have sex? Are people allowed to pee in your mempool? Do you have to? There's so much meta drama here that I think we could talk about all of it without actually having to say the word.
If for every time we need to every time somebody accidentally says the word, you need to instead of like getting to have a drink or rip a nice Marlboro grit, you can't do that for like at least the next couple minutes. You know, so how about
you
that?
You have to add 1 hour to your podcast listening for the next week.
Well, see, no, that's also a positive thing, right? Like I'm just going to be saying the word all the time, but we'll let people. Pardon me. Let them come up with their own punishments. But actually, so maybe a good place to start, just speaking of sex, is somebody asked the question, which I thought was really fair. Let me find it here. Why are Bitcoin podcasters allowed to have sex, but not Bitcoin developers? Discuss. Or is the answer self-evident? You know?
Personally, I believe that core devs should be allowed to have sex. Podcasters and core devs should both be allowed to have sex. It's not me that has these hypocritical rules for others. It's other people. It is the quote unquote silent side of the group. They don't believe that core devs should be allowed to have sex. But I know that Richard, you know, you kind of covered this topic in the emergency spaces last night. Like, what was the vibe last night about this topic?
Can I also just say I was literally like, as I'm about to head to bed after a long night of editing Bitcoin podcasts, people don't realize that you burn the midnight oil when you're a Bitcoin podcaster. Wife and child are peacefully asleep. You're up for another several hours, just Bitcoin podcasting stuff all around. And I saw this space pop up like right as I was like about to brush my teeth. And I was like, I want to join it so badly, but if I do, then I won't sleep for several hours. So I missed it. And I want to apologize for that because I should have, you know, it's like the triangle of choices that you can make. It's like, do you Bitcoin podcast? Do you sleep? Or do you listen to Bitcoin podcasts? And you can only pick two out of those three, right? So I should have gone with make Bitcoin podcast, listen to Bitcoin podcast, get rid of sleep. But I made the wrong choice and I want to apologize.
Well, I had the same dilemma last night, and I think I might have made the wrong choice by having the space instead of making Bitcoin podcasts. I've got some editing backlog that I need to work
through.
Technically,
the space was a Bitcoin podcast, though, actually. So,
sure.
You know.
The mood was interesting. I had Shinobi and Frank Corva up, and we were discussing the institution of journalism and just the kind of backhanded, passive-aggressive responses that came out yesterday. And I just think it's a weird one. This is one of those things that's going to be really interesting with Bitcoin going forward as it gets more adopted, is you have a lot of people with differing viewpoints, oftentimes incompatible with each other. And one of those ones is, you know, people feeling like they have the moral authority to determine how people can and can't have sex. And we've seen this in religion across the board. Like, you know, there's these Muslim countries like Saudi Arabia that will, use corporal punishment publicly, you know, based on people's sex life. There's certain religions that are very aggressive on this this front. And you're going to have a lot of people, you know, that think that they can dictate what other people can do. Like, you know, that's what statism is at the end of the day, is it's, trying to wield this vehicle of violence to control other people's behavior. And the statists are, you know, becoming increasingly more interested in Bitcoin. And there's a lot of statists with strange opinions on how people should have sex. And so the only reason why I talk about it, people have asked me, why am I so obsessed with sex? And I'm really not. But I feel like there's these narratives that are being propagated trying to dictate what people can and can't do that need to be shut down quickly, because if they fester, you know, the next Bitcoin civil war, so to say, on Twitter, that, you know, the psyop pseudo spoofed, you know, engagement farming nonsense might be over how podcasters need to have sex or should have sex. And like, this or is shouldn't. The yeah
right like yeah, I, it's all these religions that you talk about, they have a lot, some of them have clergy in these, or they have the priests, and the priests are supposed to take a vow of celibacy. And there's various reasons for that. And they, some people in this debate, they view core devs or anybody who knows how to code as having access to this special skill, this special communication with the digital world, this abstract bridge between reality and technology. And they consider the core devs almost like a priesthood, and they treat Luke kind of like the, you know, Luke doesn't believe that there is a pope right now who is legitimate. He doesn't think the pope is legitimate, and some of his followers kind of see him as their pope. And on that side of it, it is, I don't know if I'm pronouncing this right, this set of Acantists, they also don't believe that the Pope is legitimate. They have an empty chair, the holy chair. They believe that the holy chair, that nobody can sit in the holy chair until spam is completely defeated. And nobody can sit down until the job is done. It's kind of, somebody else made this remark to CoinJoin Chris on Twitter the other day, but it's kind of like the opposite of sell all your chairs for Bitcoin. There's too much religionizing or sacredizing of core devs when anybody can be a core dev. You don't have to go to, the seminary to be a core dev. You don't have to go to Jimmy Song's coding boot camp. If you want to be a core dev, you just do it.
And yet, once they become core devs, they don't want them to be able to go to the seminary.
It's hypocritical. It's very hypocritical. The seminary is permissionless. Other than the person that you're going to the seminary with, as long as they have. But other than that, nobody should be able to tell you that you can't go to the seminary.
Exactly. I don't know if seminaries are real, but for the purposes of this conversation, I think we all know what we're talking about. I think it all kind of comes back to vibes, right? And this is not just because I'm talking my book as the SVP, Senior Vibes Podcaster of Vibes Capital Management. I am talking my book a little bit, but my book is just vibes, really, right? And I think that's the important thing to just preface this conversation with. But it does all come back to vibes. And I think for anyone who is viewing this objectively, you can look at this debate, war, mutual attack, whatever we want to call it, discussion, and say that there's one side that just has some vibes that are a bit off, and off in a like an off-putting way. Like vibes where you're like, whoa, like it's like, you know, like you're at the bar and like there's like you're, you know, there with your friends and you're smoking hot wife. My smoking hot wife. I mean, like, you guys aren't there with my smoking hot wife. I am. Stay back. But, you know, you're there and there's just some dude in the corner who's kind of like, and you're like, that guy, what is it about him? There's a phrase in Romanian. My smoking hot wife's Romanian. It's o față care cere palme. It means a face that begs for a slapping. And to be clear, I'm not advocating for violence here. But I will use words that could be viewed as violent by some liberals, which is that some people's opinions just beg for a slapping because they're just, you know, everybody's entitled to your opinion, right? But, you know, like everyone's dad says, like, opinions are like assholes. Everyone's got them and they all stink. And it's like, well, then get a bidet, dad. Like, just get a bidet like the Europeans do. Jesus, like, don't give into the toilet paper industrial complex. That's a whole different rabbit hole there. We don't need to get into it now. And honestly, we'll be, you know, unalived if we do. But the moral of the story here is I think that it's very clear that a certain group of people, I'll leave it up to the listener to decide which group that is, has vibes that are bad right now. And I'm not saying the other side has these impeccable, perfect vibes. It's not what I'm saying. Just that objectively looking at this from a vibes-based assessment, again, it's what I know. It's what I do at Vibes Capital Management. The vibes are bad. The vibes are bad. And I don't feel the need to elaborate on why they're bad any further. Like you either sense the bad vibes or you don't, right? Like, it's like, right. If you don't believe me, you don't get it. I don't have time to explain it to you. Sorry. Like,
yeah, the saying that your dad has about opinions, you know, Shinobi has he told me a really good one. It's kind of an updated version. It's you know, opinions are like plebs. They're all retarded.
That's much better. I'm going to tell my dad that. He's going to love it.
Yeah, I think what we've seen over and over, just watching the general PSYOP industrial complex, is the people with the bad vibes tend to have the most voice in our culture and society because they're the most active. They're the most mobilized. The people with the good vibes don't feel like it's necessary to do as much work. They're not going to be yelling at people on social media trying to skew perspectives. And so I think it's really important to be cognizant of people with bad vibes, you know, question their agendas. I think some of them are just cannon fodder. And I think some of them might actually either, you know, just be opportunists or actually malicious in some way, trying to drive an agenda. And, yeah, I mean, nobody wants to hang out with people with bad vibes. And you see this happen over and over in social groups where oftentimes there's people that tolerate the person with the bad vibes. They get invited to the party over and over again, even though that they're annoying and they lecture you about something you don't care about. And for whatever reason, but then the second that somebody stands up and says, hey, you suck, you've got bad vibes, the whole crowd turns on them. And the vibe check is very, very effective. It's very effective. And in many ways, it gives people permission to not tolerate bad vibes.
Yeah, shout out to BitPain. He is like the chief of vibe checker on the timeline these days. He kind of stays out of most of the back and forth, the node spam and stuff. But once he comes out and vibe checks, it's usually a signal.
I mean, he's a vibes tastemaker, really. And as one of the founding you know, as the, one of the co-founders of Vibes Capital Management, like I really look up to him as that kind of, as a Vibes leader. Right. And I think it's your the earlier point that was made about people with good vibes don't necessarily feel the need to like make their good vibes like known, because like that would be a bad vibe to be like, you don't need to shove your vibe in other people's faces. If the vibes are good, like good vibes are self-evident and kind of self-perpetuating. But the people with bad vibes, because their vibes are so bad, they need to get out there. They need to be pushing what they don't realize as, because of course nobody thinks that they have bad vibes, right? Everybody thinks their vibes are good, but some people's vibes are bad and some people's vibes are good. And the people with the bad vibes, it's like the normie that doesn't know they're a normie. Like people with bad vibes don't know they have bad vibes. Mid-curvers don't know they're mid-curve. As American Hoddle Hodel said, and I always like to say Hoddle Hodel just because one is the correct pronunciation, one is how he identifies, and I told him I will respect that, absolutely. But like the normie doesn't know they're a normie. The mid-curver has never heard of the mid-curve, you know, of the bell curve meme. Like the bad vibes person doesn't know they have bad vibes. They think their vibes are good, or they've probably just never even heard of vibes, period. Maybe that's it. They actually just don't even know that a vibes-based perspective of the world exists, when in fact, everyone with good vibes knows that that is the only way to progress through the world. And so you almost feel bad for these people, because it's like the, you know, it's like they're colorblind, but they don't know it. And they wouldn't even if you told them they were colorblind, they wouldn't even know what a color is. They can't even conceptualize of what they are blind to, because they literally have no way of knowing it. Like your vibe's blind, basically. Did we just coin a new term, vibes blind?
I think we vibe did. Blind. Yeah. It's and a lot of people have heard of vibes, but they don't understand them. And it's kind of like, the comparison I would make would be like the guy who wears the, this is what a male feminist looks like t-shirt, and he goes to the bar and he's telling women, he's like, I am a male feminist. I stand for women's rights. And if you really were an ally to women, if you were out there making your note available for women to use, in a safe and secure manner, you don't have to tell them. You don't have to advertise good vibes. Good vibe, like you said it correctly. Good vibes are self-evident, and kind of anybody who comes in your into your sphere, into your gravitational pull, will sense those good vibes, or they won't. You can't if you accuse them, or if you are accused of having bad vibes, there's no defense against it, because vibes are it's an instinctual thing. You feel the vibe in your gut, and it's either good or bad. Some people are better at trusting their gut, or being able to, you know, parse signal from noise when it comes to their instincts. But at the end of the day, one of the easiest ones to sense is the vibe. You feel it in your gut and you know it pretty instinctually.
Yeah, it really is. Like, I wondered that. I would love to see a study as to how vibes-based assessments can actually be traced back to the microbiome of the gut. And I did hear that RFK Jr. is working on this. It is part of kind of his MAHA movement, is really tracing that, you know, those vibes-based assessment and the creation of good vibes back to the microbiome of the gut. How many Marlboros a day and how many Miller Lights a day do you need to ingest in order to achieve the perfectly balanced microbiome? I don't know. The scientists are working on this. I'm not a scientist. I'm just a podcaster. It's a harder job than scientist. I think that a lot of people don't talk about this, and it's, you know, it's nice when you can have Bitcoin podcasters podcasting about Bitcoin podcasting, because we're some of the few people. It's like, oh, doctors are out there, you know, saving lives, undoubtedly, but they can only save one life at a time. How many lives can a Bitcoin podcaster save with just one Bitcoin podcast? And the pressure that puts on you, it can be overwhelming at times. And that's, I think, also why the good vibes are so important, because good vibes save lives and bad vibes kill people. And that's just the reality of it.
It's very important to understand the responsibility as a Bitcoin podcaster that we all play. And there's a lot of people out there that like to turn their nose ups to Bitcoin podcasters, and they like to dismiss it. And I think, instead of saying that there's too many Bitcoin podcasts or Bitcoin podcasters suck, or, you know, whatever it is, like, have some fair criticism of individuals. If somebody is doing something you don't think is good, then criticize them for it and try and encourage them to be better. Because realistically, you know, you could have a massive impact on somebody's life and the choices that they make, because you're talking about a subject that actually matters. And very few people in the media ecosystem are talking about subjects that matter right now. Very, very few. And it's just important to understand that. Like, you need, when you're going into the podcast studio, you need to understand that if you're taking this seriously, you might be in a history book someday. The children in the Citadel schools might be reading about you like they read about the founding fathers. Like, it's not, do you want to be a Benedict Arnold type person? Or do you want to be?
Oh, sorry. Now here I am cutting off a fellow Bitcoin podcaster. 1,000 pardons, sir. Continue.
It's just, it's a big responsibility. Like, you have to think about the legacy that you're leaving and the consequences of the things that you do and say. It's a absolutely massive responsibility that we've undertaken by engaging in the media world.
Peter McCormack changed my life. Like, him and Guy Swan, literally, those were the two Bitcoin podcasts that I started out with. Because, you know, as an American, you like listening to a British person, because just of that, like, you have a little bit of that colonial mentality still, where you think they're automatically smarter than you. And then once you meet enough British people, you realize, oh, no, okay, I see what's really happening here. But Peter's different. But look at Peter. He's gone from Bitcoin podcaster to now Bitcoin Batman to maybe saving England. So, you know, don't tell me that Bitcoin podcasters can't change the world, because I'm watching it happen every single day, and it's beautiful.
Yes, and Peter is a great example. I agree with you. You know, there's a lot of people still today who will have a lot of criticisms of Peter McCormack, and I think all those criticisms have already been discussed on Bitcoin podcasts for the past 5 years. But no Bitcoin podcaster is perfect. Everybody is going to make mistakes. But what he did do is he is the the platonic ideal of a good Bitcoin podcaster, is someone with a child's mind. Peter approached every episode, every interview, like a fresh noob. He doesn't understand Xbox. He doesn't understand how to run a node. I don't think he could ever figure out how to open and balance a Lightning channel. And people criticize him for things like that, but, you know, it's important to have somebody ask questions from that perspective, because that is what all these listeners are thinking about over and over and over. No matter how many times you watch BTC sessions with his AI muscles doing like a hardware wallet tutorial, when you go to do it yourself, the stakes are much higher, because it's your sat, it's your money, it's your savings. So when you're doing every little connection, every little setup, you're some people, you know, they sweat, their hands are shaking because they don't do it often enough. But there's also to take into consideration, like, the criticisms I talked about of Peter, because some of them are fair. When you are a Bitcoin podcaster, a lot of times the Bitcoin podcaster themselves actually plays into that, you know, dismissive, condescending attitude about a Bitcoin podcast. Whereas, I'm just a Bitcoin podcaster. You shouldn't listen to me. I'm just a Bitcoin podcaster. You shouldn't get your advice about how you're going to spend your life savings. But the people do. And that's why, you know, when I say Peter, you know, changed my life for the better and for the worse. I mean, I was on BlockFi. That changed my life. But I'm a Bitcoin podcaster now, and it's the best decision I've ever made, which definitely outweighs the BlockFi stuff.
I think the best decisions, at least for me, the things that have been most impactful in my life, it's like meeting my wife and marrying her, having a beautiful child together, starting a Bitcoin podcast. And after that, it's like the level of impactfulness of life events just drops off a cliff, right? Because those are kind of those foundational events, those trifecta of events, that once you have those, it's like you're pretty well set. Like, directionally, your life is on the right track. And I think it's a very important thing about the, I think about this a lot, you don't want to fuck over your fellow plebs, right? Because every Bitcoin podcaster, most of us anyway, we're once plebs, and we still are plebs. And, you know, this is why I start off every episode with a pre-recorded version of me saying, greetings and salutations, my fellow plebs. Because like we all start from there. Maybe there's a couple of us who didn't, but okay, by and large, we all start from there. And the last thing you ever want to do is to screw over your fellow plebs. You don't want to fuck them over. You don't want to screw over the people who have put their trust in you, who give you part of their absolutely scarce 40 hours per week. They're giving you a piece of that. I mean, 40 hours per week, that's more scarce than Bitcoin in many ways. Because what does it come down to? That's a piece of your life. And your life is certainly more scarce than Bitcoin. Furthermore, your life is necessarily an unknown scarcity. We cannot know when we will die, but we know that we will. We could die tomorrow. We could die during a Bitcoin podcast. Knock on wood. Let's pray we don't, right? Live to podcast another day. But the important thing is that when somebody gives you part of their 40 hours per week, they're giving you part of their life. They're giving you part of their absolutely scarce time that they do not know exactly how much of it they have, but they're giving part of it to you. What will you do with that responsibility? I think it's incumbent on us as Bitcoin podcasters to make sure that we are, they are giving us value in the form of their time and attention. We need to make sure we give that value back. And then so that they in turn give more value back to us in the form of sats, which is also an expression of their life, time, work, etc. And then again, you have this beautiful circular economy of Bitcoin podcasting. And I feel like that's just, it's not talked about enough. We hear about these physical circular economies. But what about the Bitcoin podcasting circular economy? You know, but who's going to talk about it except Bitcoin podcasters? So I guess really that's our fault. Wow. Just got myself there.
Yeah, man. I think you're a wonderful example, Walker. You've got a hot wife that likes Bitcoin. You got gray hair, got a great sounding voice. You've got a good lighting setup.
Take me to dinner first. Come on.
You hang out with Bitcoin podcasters quite a bit, and the world needs good examples.
You can just start a Bitcoin podcast too. That's what I try to remind people. It's like it has never been more accessible to become your own media empire, and that empire doesn't have to be huge. You can create an empire of just a few people who are listening to you. But if you are still part of their 40 hours per week, you are making a difference. And from an economic perspective, you can really get started with a high quality podcast for pretty darn cheap. I mean, granted, priced in Bitcoin, will the cost of your podcasting equipment eventually buy you a, you know, multifamily home? Yes. But these are the sacrifices you have to be willing to make as a Bitcoin podcaster. You are sacrificing some sats in the present to leave a legacy of Bitcoin podcasting into the future. And I think that that's important. And for anyone who is like, well, what gear do I get? If you go to bitcoinpodcast.net, which was an available domain, thank you very much, as was titcoin.org. Fun fact, you know where titcoin.com redirects to? It redirects to mises.org. I did not buy that one. It was already redirecting to mises.org. So when people say, oh, titcoin, that's inappropriate. Like, I don't know if you're exactly the flavor of podcast we want to sponsor with our fiat dollars. I say, that's fine. I'd rather be in league with the Mises folks anyway. But I digress. Go to bitcoinpodcast.net/gear, and I literally put together a whole list of gear that you can get, which is pretty cool. And you can like work your way up to one of these sweet roadcasters too, which has like fun little things like a trombone by pressing a button. What a world we live in here. You know, it's amazing. I've got some other stuff to add to this. I got to add more.
We need to incorporate more of that, actually. But
we do, yeah.
It's important also to know that you don't have to be hot like you to start a podcast. There's a couple guys, in the group chat that we mentor, and some of them say they keep saying they're going to start a podcast soon. One of them, you know, he's waiting to fly to Turkey to get the hair plugs to fix his bald, you know, his bald sure. spot
it's
before he starts his podcast. Yes, exactly. Before he starts his podcast, I'm like, listen, man, nobody's going to be listening to or watching your podcast when you first start. Your first X amount of episodes, it's for, you know, finding your voice, becoming proud of yourself, you know, finding a sponsor, coming up with a good logo. There's so much more to being a Bitcoin podcaster than just being hot. And there's so much involved in people take it for granted. They dismiss, they think, you know, I've heard a lot of people say, oh, you know, this guy, a Bitcoin podcaster, figured it out. I can figure it out. Don't be so sure, because Bitcoin podcasting involves a lot of technical editing. You have to deal with terrible user experience. We're using Riverside right now. And, well, boy golly, I don't have to tell you if you've used Riverside before that it's not a smooth sailing ship. You got to figure out Zap.stream. You got to figure out Noster. You got to figure out Fountain. If you think those work every time you're trying to use them, you're in for a surprise. It's not easy, and part of becoming a proud Bitcoin podcaster who has something interesting to say, who has something insightful and valuable to say, is going through all those steps, conquering the bad user experience of the podcasting frontier, and being able to be that good example that other people can follow.
I would actually love to talk about you guys a little bit, because I want to say I'm so stoked that we're doing this right now, because I have very closely followed and respected the work that you guys have done. As a fellow satirist of sorts, I used to do more in the satire space when I had my smoking hot wife by my side before I knocked her up, and she produced a beautiful little offspring for us. But like that was our shtick, right? Was the satire side of things. And now, you know, our satire was a different form of it, right? It was a little bit more in your face. I would put you guys akin to the Babylon Bee of Bitcoin. You know, it's, and I mean that as the highest form of praise. If I wanted to insult you, I'd call you the Onion of Bitcoin. You know what I mean? You're like, you know, they used to be okay, but then like you get a little older and you're like, what are these? Are just stupid liberal jokes that aren't even funny. Like that's kind of what, like, I feel like the Onion still has a chance, right? But like for now, it's just like, ha ha ha. That's like, it's fine. It's like the left can't meme, right? Because, and I'm digressing, but the left can't meme because you need to have fundamental truth on your side in order to be funny. And if you don't have fundamental truth on your side, you're just doing like this weird, like just like appealing to like the Karen common denominator of like, anyway, you guys fucking crush it. And I appreciate the work that you guys do, because it brings something that is the exact reason that Carl and I started making videos in the first place for Bitcoin, which is people, it helps people not take themselves so seriously. And it brings a little bit of a lighter atmosphere to Bitcoin. But most importantly, through satire, we can ultimately find truth, because satire only works when it is true, right? And so I'm going into Bitcoin podcaster mode. I kind of want to know the story, as much of it as you're comfortable with telling, without any doxing or anything like that. But like, what was the moment when you guys were like, we're going to start the Bitcoin Bugle, and we're going to take this goddamn world by storm?
I started it probably about a year before Rod joined me. And when Rod joined, it really started to accelerate in 2023. I mean, the big thing is just, I didn't see people making things that I wanted to see made. And I felt like I had, with my credentials, I had something to offer the world. And there wasn't really an intention of going anywhere. There wasn't really an intention of doing anything, because I was just doing it for myself. Because I wanted to feel good about the way that I was using my time. I wanted to be able to use my brain in a way that I thought was, you know, productive and useful, instead of working, you know, for somebody else or promoting somebody else's agenda. I wanted to promote the things that I thought was important. And it just kind of evolved from there. Rod joined, I'm not sure when, shortly after. He started writing a bunch of banger articles. We started podcasting, and I think that's when things really took off. It started getting exciting. I think this is what we're seeing, you know, industry-wide. A lot of these companies need to realize the importance of a good Bitcoin podcast. That's really where things take off, in my opinion.
When I joined, in part of my motive for joining the Bugle was, it was the end of 2023, and anybody who remembers the culture of the podcast space, Bitcoin Twitter back at that time, there was some similarities to what we're seeing today, which is everything seemed to be boiling down to a conspiracy that, or any drama in the space, the Bitcoin space particularly, seemed to be boiling down to a conspiracy, and everybody immediately thought, this is Swan's fault. This is anti-Swanitism. This is what, and it was, I had no intention, like, I didn't, Richard has said this many times, but I agree with it. It's like, stop making me defend Swan Bitcoin. That's not where I wanted. I don't want to get online all day and defend Swan, defend Corey, defend Brian, you know, against Planeter, right? But the problem I realized was that people don't have enough they did not have enough imagination. They don't, we talked about this. You know, it was in the news this week, right? Like the Tylenol, it causes autism. I think it's like Tylenol, SSRIs, it's dampening our ability to read divides correctly. And maybe that's kind of what autism is a little bit. It's the inability to navigate complex vibes. And when you get into some of this, you know, the Bitcoin starts to scale as a culture, as an industry, the vibes get a little more complicated. And there's a whole lot of problems. There's a whole lot of, and not everything's a problem either. There's just a lot of situations where you can't just blame podcasters. You can't just blame Swan. It is some people are selling their own bags. Some people are exploiting the rowdiness. There's a lot of times Bitcoin Twitter that everybody gets the zoomies and they just want to like go crazy and retweet and dunk on people. and not everybody can be monetizing that. That's what's happening right now in Bitcoin. It's like nobody really is. Now, you can't take what they're saying at face value because they have special incentives and they might act really emotional or very angry or like something is very serious because they're trying to sell you the solution. And just telling the truth from a slightly different perspective sometimes is all it takes. Because it's, you know, people say, oh, you're making these stories. It's called satire. And, you know, one of the people that responded to your post announcing our thesis asked, when are they going to be funny? My job's not to be funny. My job is to cheer. I'm a journalist. And it's you're doing good journalism when you're stuck between these two polar opposites. Some people say, we love you. You're so funny. We're not trying to be funny. We're trying to report the news. And then the other people say, when are you going to be funny? I'm not going to be funny. I'm just going to report the news. And so it's a win. It's a lose-lose situation. It's catch 22. But I think to boil it all down, it's, I just want to tell the truth in a way that help that people can identify with maybe a little bit better. And sometimes that's all it takes to kind of break the cognitive dissonance or start the process. And I think that's what good journalists should try to do.
Yeah, there was a while ago where,
Sorry, that was from our live studio audience.
There was a while ago where Pledator, was throwing some backhanded insults at us, you know, talking about wanting to do a comedy show. And, you know, when people get grumpy and they criticize us, I enjoy it. I really enjoy it. Like, I want nothing more than people to receive hate mail or to send me hate mail. Like, I think there's somewhere on our website that says, like, if you have, like, complaints, send it to, you know, this email address. And I don't think anybody's taken us up on that except for maybe Bitdeer one time didn't like a story that we did. They had their PR firm send us a notice. But other than that,
yeah, some a lot of hate mail for Maxie Madness.
But they posted it on Twitter. They didn't send it the email. Like I want it to be more personal, and I want it to be well thought out. But
you guys need a PO box so people can just to let's get back to good old fashioned physical hate mail, yeah. And not just that. But like real crazy psycho stuff, like people taking, you know, cutting apart bits of magazines and, you know, kind of paper macheing together a really like, you know, really creepy letter to you guys. And, you know, like, and, you know, stealing with putting some hair in there, but like, it's goat hair. And it's like, what does that mean? You know, and like get creative with your hate mail. You know, it's that too much to ask. Apparently it is, but because people aren't willing to put in the proof of work is what it comes down to.
Yeah. I just think, where I'm coming from is I'm doing this for myself. I think Rod's doing it for himself too. We're trying to find good use or good ways to use our scarce time. We both enjoy this. We both think it's a good use of our time. That's our agenda. And I think that's unusual for people and they don't understand it. And my response to the hate mail is either there's two things that you can do. If you don't like what we do, then go promote something that you do like or do it yourself. And it's like, I don't feel threatened by that. I just don't think a lot of these people are capable of doing it. And I enjoy watching people get grumpy by credentialed journalists and, you know, trying to assume there's this guy, what's his name, Rod, that's been really grumpy with you, the monk guy.
He's a, I don't want to say the words, something monk. Let me find, but yeah.
Is it a silent K word or is it a, okay.
I love it. I hope he keeps on sending the hate mail, but I like to encourage him to do something. Go start a podcast. Go do some sort of thing that's creative. Write comic books or, you know, whatever it is. Make birdhouses. Like, you use your time in a way. If you have something, if you think that Rod sucks and can't be trusted, then do something productive and put your signal out there and hopefully use your brain in the process. Like, I think that's kind of one of my missions and goals, because when I look around at our culture, I see the open mouth thumbnails. I see people either being for or against Taylor Swift. I think both are, I understand why people like Taylor Swift. I think the anti-Taylor Swift crowd's kind of interesting. I see a lot of people, you know, kind of latching onto these teams and attacking the other team with their team. And, but they're not really doing a lot. They're sitting in the peanut gallery, just like throwing mud. And I find it uninspiring. I find it really uninspiring and uninteresting. And my hope is that if anything, we can inspire people to think a little bit better, to make memes better, to be more creative, to be more interesting, to choose where they give their attention a little bit more critically so that they're consuming things that are more wholesome. Because I think that's ultimately where we get to a good place is, like, I want good movies. I want really good movies. I don't want to see the same Disney reruns. I don't want to see a live action of everything that was made like 50 years ago. I want to see new and novel ideas and people taking risks and there being an audience that's willing to support people taking risks and trying things that are different. And I think that's the way you change it, is you become the audience for that stuff, which is why I listen to 40 Hours of Bitcoin podcast. Is like, you don't like the CIA dribble that's being shoveled down your throat, you know, telling you to think one way or another way in the mainstream media. Well, if you support the CIA dribble that's being shoved down your throat with uninspiring podcasters like Lex Fridman and, you know, these other guys that just are really lame, then find the stuff that is high signal and promote it. Because those guys, like, we had David Bennett from the Bitcoin And podcast on our show this week, and I really like him. I think he's really high signal. I've liked him for a long time. I've listened to his podcast for a long time, and he just doesn't have the advantage of getting a lot of reach that other people do. And I think, you know, part of our responsibility of having a platform is collaborating with people that are doing interesting things. Like, if my goal is to support things that are thoughtful and creative, then I have to work with people that are thoughtful and creative and try and engage with them as much as possible. And I think we can make a sizable difference. I mean, this is like the exciting thing that Bitcoin teaches people, is that you can be an active, You can be an active player in your life. You can be an active participant in the world, that you can go out there and just do things, that you don't have to sit around for permission from some guy that went to Epstein Island. Like, you can choose what you want to do, pursue it, and actually fight for it. And you have the tools to be able to actually engage in the fight and be successful in it. Like, that's an exciting thing about Bitcoin. Not that it's going to magically change everybody else's opinion, because they all will come to the conclusion that they have to read the Bitcoin Standard and listen to Danny Knowles or, you know, whatever it is. It really is an exciting thing. This is part of the reason why. So I give like two pieces of homework to all our listeners. Well, I guess three. Listen to 40 hours of Bitcoin podcast a week, smoke cigarettes, and read Atlas Shrugged twice a year. And I think if you do those three things, you're going to be incredibly successful in the fourth turning. You'll be able to survive it. You're not going to be pleb cannon fodder. You're going to be incredibly successful.
At the end of the day, if you want to make a difference, you need to start a podcast. You need to be listening to podcasts and starting a podcast. There's an outdated, saying or whatever, the man in the arena. The man in the arena is, you know, that was fine 100 years ago. And now it's the man in the studio. The man in the studio is the one reshaping the world, or he's going to die trying, essentially.
Goddamn, guys. To that, I'd just like to say amen. And thank you to my not sponsor, but maybe someday, Ice Cold Miller Lite. Genuinely, I think that's you just dropped an incredible amount of good vibes and insightfulness. I think that people, when they see content that they view as like being, quote, a joke, they assume it's just like, oh, that's just from the funny men. Those are just the funny men over there. You know, like, dance, funny man, dance. You know, you make me laugh now, funny man. And people who are not funny, but who only ingest funny things created by other people, don't have any conception of like how actually intelligent you need to be and how much you need to understand something in order to make it funny. Like, making it funny is not, you don't set out like, how do I make this funny? It's you're telling the truth in such an obvious way that people may view it as being funny, but that's only because the absurdity doesn't come from the content itself. It comes from the nature of reality around it, right? It comes from the fact that whatever you're talking about is in and of itself so contradictory or so absurd or just so funny that simply stating what it is funny. But again, as you guys said, it's like, that's not what you're trying to be. You're just trying to tell the truth. Right. And I think it's really, think it's fucking beautiful, guys. I fucking love it. And we need more crossover episodes, by the way. That's one thing I've been trying to promote lately, is more Bitcoin podcasters going on other Bitcoin podcasts talking about Bitcoin podcasting. Cause this is that circular Bitcoin podcast economy. This is how we really, this is how we orange pill the world, right? When everyone's a Bitcoin podcaster, then no one is a Bitcoin podcaster. And then we can finally rest, But until then, we've got work to do, guys.
Just to wrap up that point you made, is there's a lot of people, and who, if you're anything like me, your inbox on multiple platforms, on multiple apps, is always full of notifications from people sending constant streams of quote-unquote funny memes to your inbox. And the people kind of have this, like, they start to get to this point where if they're the one finding all the really funny memes, then they start to feel like they're the funny one, right? They are funny because they are the ones who find all the best memes and send them to you. It's really, you're just sending the news to people, and they're finding the absurdity of the world we live in right now funny. And that's kind of like the meme of like the joke. Or the clown is, he's got the smiling paint on, but really he's sad. And to be, I think, to create original content that people do find funny, I think you have to risk being in the sad clown, because it is a lot of work to take the really terrible stuff that's happening in the world right now and making it funny so you can get your family members or your neighbors or your coworkers to actually pay attention to it. If you can make them laugh, they'll actually pay attention to what's going on. And most of many people are trying to be like, this is all, look at the Epstein stuff, look at this, look at this. And it's like, it's really depressing, but if you can make it funny, they'll pay attention.
It's so true. I think it actually, making things funny is what makes them sticky, right? Like that's what makes it, like, it's like one of the reasons, like somebody who I just think gone too soon, first of all, but just an iconic generational talent that I don't know if the world even deserved is Norm MacDonald. Just like truly a, like what a fucking legend. That like, the guy could, he could speak two words. It didn't matter what he said. He could just say like, hi there. And people would just die laughing because there was something, but that's not him trying to be funny. That's just who he was. But things he said, they stick with you, and they cut through all of the BS and the noise that's out there, and they stay with you for a long, long, long time because they're funny in a way that you can't even quite describe, right? Like to describe it makes it no longer funny. It's like back to the vibes, and you know when you were saying earlier, like you know you can't. Like basically like the vibes are the Tao or the Tao, however you'd like to pronounce it. Like if you try to, you know, if you try to describe it, you can't. Like, and to know the Tao, you simply know it, but it's also unknowable. And if you try to, you'll never know it. And I think that's also the way with like good, really good humor. But for people that are like, how do I say this? People have gotten so used to having everything spoon-fed to them 24/7, 365 in super digestible, super instant gratification, goldfish brain format where we're just scrolling forever on an infinite, infinite loop of extremely like visually appealing and hook-based content, you know, get it because you got to get that hook in first. You got to hook them in those first 5 seconds and they're not going to pay attention. They've gotten so used to consuming in this format, but like that format, I think it strips so much actual meaning out of so much content. And this is one of the reasons that long form podcasts are actually still, you know, actually still so important, is because there is actually room for nuance. There is room for depth. And in order to make it through an entire podcast, you have to make it through an entire podcast. You have to take a significant portion of your time. It is a commitment to something. Whereas when you're just infinitely scrolling, and yeah, sure, you don't remember what you spent the last 5 minutes on, but what of it? You know, it doesn't matter. And it's only a minute per video, whatever. And then somehow you've spent the entire time that you could have spent ingesting a 90-minute podcast flipping through mindless reels that you're never going to remember ever again. And this also, just to bring it back full circle, this relates to the comedy side of things, because often in order to set up a truly great joke or to create something that is truly funny on like a wow, makes you rethink your worldview kind of level, it takes time. This instant gratification slop that is out there, that's not even AI generated slop, it's human generated slop, it just cheapens everything. And it's very fiat as well, right? Like Bitcoin podcasts are low time preference, Bitcoin adjacent activities. Shorts, reels, TikTok, whatever, are high time preference, fiat adjacent methods of consuming content. And I don't even know where I was going with this, because as a Bitcoin podcaster, it is part of my Satoshi given right that I can rant and go in, I can do the weave, as Trump would say, I can do the weave. And I don't actually ever have to bring it back to the original point. I don't even have to know what the original point was, but it's about the journey to get there.
Let me summarize what you were just saying for you. Would you rather listen to an hour of Signal by Lynn Alden, or would you rather scroll through TikTok macro? What's going to have the most value?
I think we all know the answer to that. Like, and it's not even close. I don't know how Lynn Alden packs so much Signal. Speaking of Lynn Alden, in 13 minutes, we are premiering the first of its kind Dungeons and Dragons themed Bitcoin campaign.
I've been waiting for this.
It's going to be pretty sweet. Lynn Alden is a part of it. For anyone that is listening and is like, I don't understand what Lynn Alden has to do with this. Tatum Turnip is the dungeon master. Myself, my smoking hot wife are also involved. Steven Lupka, Paper Bitcoin Summer Maximalist. Mags will also be there. This has been pre-recorded. This was recorded like last week. I took over the Herculean task of actually getting it published because, as we know, Tatum Turnip, love the guy to death, but he has a history of recording really hilarious content and then keeping it for like multiple years and never releasing it. And I couldn't let that happen. So sometimes this is the other thing, as a Bitcoin podcaster, and Tatum will say he's not a Bitcoin podcaster, so we'll forgive him here. He just has Bitcoin shows, right? And that's part of the problem is that self-identification. He needs to start identifying as a Bitcoin podcaster. What is a Bitcoin podcaster? Someone who identifies as a Bitcoin podcaster, but also because they make Bitcoin podcasts. That's really what it is. Bitcoin podcaster is somebody who makes Bitcoin podcasts. But we'll be releasing this very soon. I don't know how many people are live here on Zap.stream. I imagine it's something like four or 500,000, I'm guessing. I haven't looked at the numbers, but it's probably pretty large. So anyone who's listening, you'll be able to watch this shortly. It'll be live. And I think this is another example of, and I love that Tatum put this together, because it's an example of like a way to get people into Bitcoin without taking it too seriously. Like, do we need very serious Bitcoin podcasts? Absolutely. Do we also need things with a heartbeat of Bitcoin that are kind of Bitcoin adjacent? Like, you know, talk about Caps Lock Moonboy tweets. What happens when we have millions of D&D fans who are all of a sudden orange-pilled to Bitcoin? All I'm saying is, buckle up. Here we go. Trillions incoming. Are you paying attention? Going to the moon with this. I think that really the next wave of Bitcoin adoption, while it could be boomers watching Bitcoin QVC, it could also be D&D players who are now going to be listening to Bitcoin podcasts accidentally. They won't even know they're listening to a Bitcoin podcast because they think they're just listening to a really hilarious and awesome D&D game. They're not. They're listening to a Bitcoin podcast. They just don't know it yet. And that's how you get them started. You know, it's the foot in the door, not the door in the face.
I'm excited for Bitcoin Comic-Con.
It's basically what Carla has been essentially doing on her own this whole time is just getting ready for Bitcoin Comic-Con, just cosplaying constantly. You know, we need more of that, like less suits, more. I was going to say furries, but then I was like, no, fuck that. I was just trying to think out of like, more. You guys help me out here. We need more something else, something that is something that is the opposite of suits. Like, what was it?
Entropy.
Well, sure.
More entropy. Yeah.
We need more entropy and body. We need furries. We need comic books. Furries. People who love comic books. We need, you know, muscle, like gym bros. We need old guys who love old cars. We need hot rod guys. We need,
Train collectors.
Well, we have plenty of those.
We need mumble rappers.
Mumble rappers.
Yeah.
Broccoli haircuts. We need a lot more broccoli haircuts. We need... I'm just excited about Bitcoin Comic-Con. I want to see Shinobi doing a Naruto running workshop.
Be beautiful.
I've been trying to get him to teach me for a while, but he's hodling his secrets. It's kind of messed up.
Typical.
You know,
typical. Well, now that he's got six girlfriends, it's like, can you believe
Shinobi's
that?
Girlfriends? That's that could be a band. I don't know. I think you make a good point. Not every podcast has to be like the entire conversation doesn't have to be about the properties of Bitcoin the whole time, right? Like, and it doesn't have to be super. The way I look at it is that Bitcoin podcasts in and of themselves are serious. Bitcoin podcasting is a serious business, but that means the Bitcoin podcasters don't always have to be serious. You don't have to like go out of your way to be serious. It's already a serious discussion. So just tell the truth, and it doesn't matter what you say as long as you tell the truth.
Amen to that. And it's funny, like people may think that we're being very tongue-in-cheek about like everyone should start a Bitcoin podcast. We need more Bitcoin podcasts. I want to clarify for folks who may be confused because I do often speak in a tongue-in-cheek way. I'm not being tongue-in-cheek here. I'm genuinely being dead serious. I think that if you look at overall podcast distribution, there are so many podcasts. Most podcasts don't make it past, like, I forget what it is. It's like 12 or 13 episodes, something like 80% or 90% of podcasts just stop after that. Cause it turns out it's hard podcasting. Like the failure rate is higher than for physical restaurants, you know, which should tell you something. Cause that's a hard business to run. Podcasting is harder, again, right up there with neurosurgery, I would say. But we have so many TradFi podcasts, so many dog shit, low signal, high noise, just garbage podcasts giving people terrible, terrible information and not financial advice, but it is financial advice because people are taking it as such. Doesn't matter if you say not financial advice. That's what people are taking, like, okay, whatever. But there's just so much garbage out there. There's so much junk. There's so much noise. There's hundreds and hundreds of podcasts, maybe thousands, that are just about golf. Like, nothing against golf. I like golf as much as the next boomer. But how is it that when we have an open protocol that is the future of money as we know it, that is a paradigm shifting once in a species event, that still has like maybe 100 or so Bitcoin podcasts, like probably under 200 globally. Like that's insane. That's nothing. So when I say start a Bitcoin podcast, I fucking mean it. I mean it. Because you don't know who you, sir, I'm looking at you right there in my camera lens, who you might appeal to, what specific person you're hearing your podcast might open up an entire world for them because you said something differently or because of who you are, because they just stumbled across it and whatever you said resonated with them. You never know. And you can literally change someone's life. I think like my life was literally changed because of Bitcoin podcasts. If it wasn't for Bitcoin podcasts, I wouldn't be here today stacking Bitcoin with a Bitcoin podcast. Like, that's just the reality. So start a Bitcoin podcast and at least make it past like 10, 12, 15 episodes. Do that for yourself. Make it past where 90% of people fail.
Nate,
do that for yourself.
Nate, commit yourself to doing 21 episodes of a Bitcoin podcast. 21. If you can do 21 episodes of a Bitcoin podcast, you can stop. Or you can keep going. But I think if you make it to 21, you're going to keep going.
Yep. I say amen to that. Guys, we need to do this again. This was an outstanding experience. I'm glad we finally got to make it happen. But I do have a premiere, a world premiere coming up of this D&D thing, which is, granted, already been recorded. But I do need to be a keyboard warrior in there in the live stream chat saying hilarious things. And making little puns. Also, I might get canceled for this, guys, because there are a lot, and I mean a lot of clanker jokes. I mean, like, to the point at which, like, the Tesla Optimus bot is going to, like, beat down my door and be like, what did you say about clankers, motherfucker? You know, and I'll be like, you bulletproof yet? Papa. And he'll be like, no, but he'll already be clanked. But I make a lot of clanker jokes. Some virgin.
We need more clanker jokes.
Yeah, well, I think so. I think so. There are some that may also, there are some clanker jokes in the episode that may be offensive to silent Ks, if you know what I mean. So I'll leave it at that. Anything you guys want to leave our audience with?
Before I go, I'll just say, listen, this is a great podcast, and we should get you on Bugle's Behind the Podcast interview series sometime soon, because we'll chop it up over there.
It's a date. Dick?
Look forward to it. Yeah. I'm really excited about the D&D premiere. I've been waiting. I've been chomping at the bit. I don't know anything about D&D, but I got to say, I was pretty impressed with the costumes.
Again, cosplay, you know, this is how we orange pill the world is not, you know, it's with Bitcoin podcast, but Bitcoin podcast plus Bitcoin cosplay, like gradually then suddenly, right? We're all at Bitcoin Comic-Con or just Bitcoiners at Comic-Con, I guess. Maybe that's kind of the move too. Why are we not orange pilling at Comic-Con more? Okay. We could go down a whole 3-hour rabbit hole for that. We could spend 40 hours per week talking about Comic-Con, but alas, we must end it. The ending of the podcast is always the worst part for me because I wish it would never stop. I wish it could, this one podcast, this moment in space time, this block on the time chain could to go on forever, that we could never find the next block. But the next block is always found eventually. And I think we've just found our next block. So Dick, Rod, Greasy Palm, appreciate you guys. Appreciate the work that you do. I'm going to link all of your stuff in the old show notes. So be, you know, check it out after you've liked and subscribed, you fuck. No, actually you should listen to everyone's podcast on Fountain also is what the last thing I'd like to say. Listen on Fountain. And if you're still listening on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, fuck you. But thank you for listening still. I really appreciate you giving me your 40 hours per week, but just go listen on Fountain. Like it's just better. Bitcoiners use Fountain. So that's all I'll say on that. Okay, I think podcast over. Podcast over, guys? Podcast over.
Sounds good.
Podcast over.